I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
Welcome to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official and only podcast for UK Seahawkers. This week, we're going to look back at Week 2's preseason win against the Vikings, while look ahead to this weekend's game in Seattle against the Chiefs. We're also joined by a special guest. This week, though, we are just at two of three. Joining myself, Stuart Court, is only bloody Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
Glad he is, mate, and I'm doing ever so well. Thank you. All is good.
Cool. So, obviously, the second preseason game was over the weekend at the ridiculously early time of 3 o'clock in the morning. Somehow, my alarm was set. I don't remember doing it. Was set for 10 to 3 in the morning, and it woke me up in a bit of a stir. So, I managed to watch the first half before dropping back off to sleep. The Seahawks did run out 20 to 13 winners. What was your overall opinion of the performance and the game, Adam?
I find these quite hard to watch because I do watch them on condensed because I'm not sitting through that nonsense for 3.5 hours. But it seemed good. The offensively seemed fairly clean. Defensive, they were rushing to the ball quite quickly, but obviously it's one of those games that is punctuated in its joy with an injury that we will have to we will learn of its importance as the season goes on, I guess.
Yeah, we'll get onto all the injury and all the fallout from that. But obviously, we'll start at the quarterback, Russell Wilson, again, as he has and has been reported all off season through training camps, practices, and all the rest of it. Continued to look sharp, going 13 for 18, 206 yards, and 2 touchdowns. There'll be no surprise to people listening to this podcast who the first 2 game completions were aimed at. But yeah, the 2 touchdowns, he is really with. He's, I think PFS said he's getting the ball out quicker early this year. Actually, preseason, it might change during the season, but he's getting the ball out even quicker than he has in the past. But he just looks sharp, doesn't he?
Yeah, he looks sharp and lean, and I think that is the most important thing for him. You know, watching some of the old footage of his rookie year, he was just like gliding, like he was on ice skates in fast forward compared to the defensive players he was against. And there looked like there was a bit of that old Russ magic back in this game, which is exciting for the season.
The main recipient of the Russell Wilson sharp showing was number 89, Adam's favourite Seahawk, Doug Baldwin. It was an absolute clinic in route running, wasn't it, Adam?
Yeah, he is probably the best route runner I've seen, certainly in the top 5 or 6 in the league. Conservative with my estimate, he's just so clean, everything he does, and he's just taking great cornerbacks to school with it, to be honest. And as I've always said, if his relationship with Wilson is good, then things will be good for the season, because those are our two playmakers.
Yeah, four catches on 4 targets, 69 yards, average of 17.3, the longest of 37. It's very promising from the two of the more important facets of the Seahawks offense 2017. Obviously, the main story coming out of the game, however, was a bit of a sour one with the presumed and almost confirmed left tackle George Fant suffering what sounds like a really nasty double ACL, MCL, everything has just exploded on his knee. It's for someone who had the one of the biggest surprises of his seasons in 2016, go from a Western Kentucky basketball player to an NFL left tackle. All the work he seems to put in over the summer, it's a gutter for the player himself more than anything, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, he was one of those guys that, if his story was going to work out, it could be one of the great NFL stories, and yeah, it may well work out. He really stonewalled his guy early on in the game, and it's just a real shame that it's going to be on hold for a year when hopefully he can bounce back. Does he take a roster spot with this injury or not?
No, he'll be put on IR.
Okay.
I don't think he has, but if he put on IR, and I think one of the players who signed in his way we'll take that roster spot. Tom Cable spoke yesterday to the press on Tuesday night. We're recording on Wednesday. And here's some of what he said on Fant.
Okay, who wants to start?
Your reaction to George Fant's injury.
It's a shame. You know, it's football, but it's part of the game, but it's the bad part of the game. And he done a lot, and he made himself better, got himself physically ready to play, mentally grew up, started to become a football player, as you all saw, and then this happened. So it's a setback, and he'll get fixed, and he'll come back better than he was before. I think this will add to his overall perspective. But it's life, man, in this game, you know. You don't want it, and it hurts when it happens because obviously we think we're building something, and then to lose a piece like that. But that's why we got depth and why we got who we got.
What are the options now?
Well, I think there's a couple of them. You know, you've got Reese, who'll go out there on Friday. You've got the kid we just traded for, Matt Tobin. You've got Luke Jokel. So I think the fact that we have three options, my wish, my want, is to try and keep as much of it intact as possible. And so if anyone's saying, well, why don't they just move Jokel out there? Well, it's remember last year, if you just go back, you know, 12 months, I think there was too much of that. Nothing we could really handle then, just had to be that way. But this year we have choices, and we have the opportunity to keep as much of it intact as we can, and we'll do that.
But yeah, obviously, since the injury, something I posted on one of the WhatsApp groups we're in, Adam. For me, this is the first time we've ever seen the team like, flailing in desperation after an injury like this, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we're not exactly blessed with depth on the offensive line in the first place.
No.
We may not even be blessed with talent, who knows. But, you know, the next man up mantra has worked pretty well with the majority of people, although we've been lucky that, in general, the injuries we've had have been to manageable guys until someone like Earl Thomas goes down last year. You know, Brock Coyle filled in for Bobby Wagner a couple of times a few years ago. But in general, we've done pretty well in not getting our main guys injured, whether or not Fant is a main guy or not. It's specialized, so you know it's an important position to not lose. So yeah, I think that's probably why you're seeing that little flailing around, because you know teams don't generally carry two left tackles on the roster.
Yeah, and also someone pointed out on Twitter that is it this slight reek of desperation from the team, from the outside looking in. Anyway, is this a result of the tack they've taken with the offensive line, really, isn't it? That they've approached it with such a bargain basement way. Obviously, the basketball player, undrafted basketball player, this is at some point going to be the result of that, wasn't it?
Well, you could argue the Russell Wilson injury last year is another thing. What happens when you play with fire, you might get burned.
Yeah.
We have to hope that the team can get through this injury. Look, George Fant may have been rubbish. We never know. We're not going to know for another year. But in general, it seemed like he would have been, you know, an average player, which is sort of what you're happy with. So I guess we'll have to see. But yeah, you could see this as another repercussion of the way in which the Seahawks build their offensive line.
Yeah, obviously the main two moves that the team have made on the back of the Fant injury, they signed Tyrus Thompson, who's been in the league a couple of years and is halfway through playing for and putting on all 32 jerseys at this point. It sounds like he's got a pretty steep learning curve from what Tom Cable said yesterday. And obviously the main one was the trade for the Eagles offensive lineman. He's started most of the time at guard, but appears to be in the competition now with Reese Odhiambo at left tackle. Matt Tobin, the team giving up a fifth round pick next year in for Tobin, and the team also receive a seventh round pick next year. Thoughts on Tobin, the move to add in a draft pick suggests that he's almost a lock at this point. It's rare that the team give up a future draft pick and the player doesn't play a part, isn't it?
Yeah, they must be pretty high on him, but that doesn't necessarily correlate with the reaction on Twitter, especially from Philadelphia fans who seemed delighted to get a fifth round pick in exchange of him. And in terms of the first guy, you know, Cable saying he's got a lot to learn. Well, given how well everyone seems to do when they leave us, maybe he's got nothing to learn at all, or maybe he should just not listen to what Tom Cable wants, and he might be a decent offensive lineman.
Yeah, I think people on Twitter last night were highlighting how Gary Gilliam looked the other night for the 49ers, where he just stonewalled every pass rusher he faced, which is just another layer to the frustration with the offensive line and Mr. Cable. But outside of the Fant injury, are you happy with how the preseason is progressing. Obviously, the line appears slightly better. I mean, obviously, it's not a low bar to jump, but are you happy with how the preseason's going forward, the signs it's showing for the 2017 season?
Yeah, the line look not shit, which is all I ask for. You know, it's all I ever ask for from the offensive line. And the team look pretty sharp on both sides of the ball. McKissic has been a bit of a disappointment, and I think they're going to have a bit of a problem with returns because he doesn't look up to it, in my opinion. You know, it's a minor part of the game, but it's potentially a very important part of the game. But you're not going to want Tyler Lockett running back kicks, especially after his injury. So that might be a position that needs addressing. But apart from that, I think everything looks pretty good.
Yeah, and I think on the defensive side, Shaq Griffin's took a lot of the attention, rightly, really, because going for a third-round pick, the team that doesn't really start rookies outside at cornerback is, it seems, verging on doing that with the third-round pick from last April. For me, I said to you a couple of days ago, for me, with Shaq Griffin, it is a case of just when that light switches, when it all clicks, the team appear that they have a special player. Because as you said, he looks like he enjoys a race. It's just the things in the 0 to 12 yard range, isn't it, that he needs to...
Yeah, he gave up a lot of first downs underneath, which I think he was playing Stephon Diggs a lot of the time. So yeah. I'm sort of willing to give him a pass on that. I mean, we famously batted for Sherman against Julio Jones in the playoffs because he gave stuff up underneath but nothing over the top. So I'm not too disappointed with that, but there's only so many little 12 yard completions you can give for the opposition's in the end zone.
Yeah.
So, you know, eventually that has to stop. But I think if Deshaun Shedd was healthy, then I would 100% be playing Deshaun Shedd.
Yeah.
But considering it's Jeremy Lane on the outside, you just wonder if you might as well give the rookie some reps so he can learn and get to the stage where you expect him to be sooner than later, because Jeremy Lane is a fine, fine nickel cornerback, but there'll always be question marks about him on the outside.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. Obviously, the offensive side, two games in, obviously the third is Chiefs this week, and I think it's the Raiders next Thursday night. But two games in, obviously the offensive pleasant surprise is possibly... Well, it is Kaysom Williams with how he's starring out. On the defensive side, who's someone outside of Griffin who has stood out for you and has really staked a massive claim for a roster spot?
That's a good question. Again, I do watch these games on condensed, so you don't necessarily get to see what happens after each play, but probably Naz Jones.
Yeah.
I think he seems to be the uniform decision as someone that's really stood up and made a claim for his spot.
Yeah, I think Jones, I think also on that defense, David Bass, whatever, he just looks like a complete, he looks like he's already on the 53, he looks like he's going to have a big say in this season. He's someone we saw DeMontre Moore role, we saw him take up last year. I think that could be where we see David Bass in 2017 for the Seahawks. But yeah, moving on, this week we have a very special guest, joining the podcast.
Hi, I'm Terry Peppard, listening to the podcast. Go Hawks and keep the faith.
Our guest this week is the defensive line coach for the East Mississippi Lions, the school which were profiled over the first two seasons of the Netflix original series Last Chance U. If you haven't had a chance or haven't got round to watching it yet, myself, and I'm sure Adam can echo this, it's a must watch. It's an absolute fantastic series. It's really interesting throughout. Our guest is entering his fourth year as coach, the defensive line coach for the Lions, and is a former seventh-round selection of the Dolphins and former coach at Jacksonville State. We are joined by Coach DeVern Williams. Coach, welcome to the podcast.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
No, massively appreciate. Obviously, the time difference is a bit of a nightmare with things like this. It's quite early in the morning over there for you, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I normally get around to the office around 8 o'clock anyway, so it's early, but it's on time.
So what is a normal day? Obviously, the season kicks back up for you. I think it's next week, isn't it? So what is a normal day in the build-up to a season like?
Well, we're in season mode right now. You know, we just finishing up camp last week, so, you know, this week we started working on our first week's opponent. So, you know, we'll come in the office around 8:30, you know, watch film, draw cars up for practice. You know, we'll meet as a staff, to talk about things that need to get done between now and game day, and then we'll meet defensively as a defensive staff and, you know, go over some of the things that we want to do on defense and, you know, get ready for practice. You know, we draw cards and make the practice schedule and things of that nature. So it gets pretty busy, but, you know, once you get in a routine and, you know, get things in order like you want them to, you know, it's a pretty smooth transition, you know, in our day-to-day routine.
Yeah, Adam?
When you're trying to profile opposition, especially on the first week of a new season in a league where there's huge transition of players in and out, it must be really hard to find any tape of that you can actually use of the opposition and build a game plan. You must sort of, in this game especially, have to sort of plan whilst you're playing.
Right. Well, normally what you do, first game of the season, you go, you base it off, you know, that team's last 3 to 4 ball games to kind of, you know, pick apart what they're going to do or what they may try to do to you, you know. So that's normally how it works in the football world, you know. But as far as the new players concerned, you know, that is going to be the element of surprise, you know. How good, you know, the new players that we don't know about are going to be able to play. You know, you won't know that till you actually step on the field. But schematic-wise, you know, what they're doing, we can kind of get a bid off their last 3-4 ball games of the previous season.
Yeah, so obviously I'm off the back of the second series of the show on Netflix. The Lions are the preseason ranked number 2. Is it another? Obviously, the main aim for this year is the national title again. Is that yet again a realistic goal to aim for this year?
Oh man, you know, our goal every year is to be 1-0 every week.
Yeah,
you know. And as long as we're 1-0 every week, you know, championships will come. You know, we don't set out at the beginning of the season to win a national championship. We just set out to win our first game.
Yeah.
And then the next game. We get the next game after that. And once we get those wins up under our belt, and then we start seeing that tunnel, then, you know, it's just a little extra motivation to work for that. But, you know, at the end of the day, we always want to be 1-0. Every week. That's our main goal. We don't focus on championships until we actually get to that championship week or that championship game.
Yourself and Buddy and people that have been there for the last 3-4 years, I know that you just want to go 1-0 and that makes perfect sense, but it has to leave you with a bit of a chip on your shoulder the way that the last two seasons have ended without you guys really being able to reach what you deserve to matters outside of football.
Oh yeah, no doubt it does. You know, we feel like you know, the 2015 season actually cost us 2 national championships.
Yeah.
Which we, you know, rightfully so it did. But, you know, there's nothing that we can do right now to change that but win now. And last year was kinda like a little bit of redemption because we won the state championship. But, you know, any coach and any football player, any team will let you know that winning that national means a whole lot more. So, you know, it's just how we're tasting our minds gradually come, going away, and now we can gradually just work back to getting back to that championship mindset with the new group of guys that we have.
Yeah. So on the show, how was filming the show for you? Obviously, it's quite a unique situation to be in for a coach, but the cameras following you around for 2 years. How was it for you?
Oh man, I loved it, man. I think it was good for our players and good for the morale of the team. You know, it kind of let them play hard because, you know, they wanted to make last chance shoot, you know, actually make the cut, do the edits. But, you know, I think it was good, man. You know, the one thing about me, I'm going to be me regardless whether there's a camera on my face or not.
Yeah.
You know, so it really didn't bother me. I actually had fun with it. You know, I enjoyed seeing the guys, you know, get their camera time. I enjoyed seeing the guys, you know, hearing their stories or whatever, just watching the show. So it was pretty unique, you know, for me. I did have to watch what I say because my mom thought I cussed too much.
Adam?
I think the second season especially, they seemed to add a lot more colour outside of just the game, and I felt that we found out a lot more about you guys as individuals. And my favourite two scenes with you especially were when you went back to your families to eat, but actually when you went back to Troy, was it a homecoming or something, and you gave a speech in the locker room, and I thought that was really great, and you looked very much at home in a team like that. Is that any ambition or aspiration to be like that, because you carried yourself like the head coach?
Well, you know, that was actually my old high school, and my high school team that I played for, and you know, that year, that particular weekend, the reason why I was there, they were celebrating our, you know, 20-year anniversary of our state championship, and you know, the people who put the reunion together, you know, made it so where I can speak to the team, and you know, I always aspire to be the best coach that I can be the best person I can be, and I feel at home anytime I'm around football, and I do desire to be a head coach, and I know there's going to be steps that I'm going to have to take in order to get that. But, you know, someone gives me the opportunity to let me be a head coach of their football program out the gate, they won't be disappointed. I feel like I'm a people person, and I'm good with ball. So I think it goes hand in hand. But it was a good experience. I was glad that Netflix had the opportunity to capture that, you know. Because, again, football is what I do, and I enjoy it.
Another thing away from the field is that you and Miss Wagner seemed, you especially, mainly maybe because a lot of the players featured were D-linemen, but you seemed to take on a much more pastoral role as well as just being a football coach, and you seemed to have these kids' interest at heart, which was great to see. It must be quite demoralizing at times when you see people, you've obviously got a great drive to be the best you can be. It must be quite frustrating at times to see kids on or off the field maybe not give their best when you just want to give them a shake and say, look what you could be. It must be quite tough to deal with that sometimes.
Yeah, it is tough to deal with it because, you know, I look back at my situation when I'm in their shoes and acting the same way that they acted. You know, I wish I had someone like me to kind of, hey, come on, pick it up, you know, and not just, hey, pick it up, but just be real with them to the point where they understand. You know, these days you can't be, oh, Jimmy, you got to come on, you got to do it, you can do it. No, you got to be real and get your butt up, man, and let's go. What else you going to do? Go home and do, you know. So you got to be, you know, real with them to the point where they can understand, you know, where you're coming from. And, yeah, it's frustrating, you know. It's kids that's, you know, that didn't make the show that, you know, frustrates you as well, you know. But at the end of the day, you still got to do your best job to motivate them, because I don't want a kid to leave here, you know, and fall by the wayside under my watch. So I'm going to try to do everything I can to help them, but if they don't want to receive my help, then more power to them.
Yeah, in the second series, spoiler for those guys who haven't yet watched it, you have three of the main guys who are the big recruits, and as Adam said, they were profiled quite heavily during the season, with Tim Bonner, Chauncey Rivers and Cam Carter. What role, if any, did you have in bringing them to Scuba and to the Lions?
Well, Tim Bonner was a young man who grew up not too far from, you know, Scuba. So when he was coming out of high school, you know, he was on the verge of not qualifying. So, you know, I reached out to him, went to go see him. I had already recruited him straight out of high school. So that relationship with him, you know, I guess mattered to him, because once he left Louisville, you know, he called us and, you know, we were able to get him here on our campus. So it worked out really well. Our defensive coordinator at the time, Ed Holly, played the role in getting Cam Carter here.
Yeah.
So, well, we all played the role, but, you know, I talked to Cam and recruited Cam to get him here, but at the same time, Ed Holly was the one that brought him to the table.
With Carter, and obviously the difference between him and Bonner, and the characters, obviously Bonner always had a smile on his face, it seemed, every time the camera was on him. Was it a challenge to coach players when they're so different to one another, even though they're the same role?
No, it's not that challenging.
No?
You know, because the common denominator is football.
Yeah.
And you would be amazed to see how humbling any young man would be once he sees the mistakes that he makes on the field.
Yeah.
Okay? But then you also see, it's also amazing to see the response of these young men when they see they make mistakes on film. I correct them, and then we turn on that same film, and they're doing a good job. So that's a humbling experience.
Yeah.
You know, you got to understand most of the time, whether you're a five-star recruit or a one-star recruit, you know, these guys want to get better. And when they see themselves getting better, then they'll start listening to you. But they have to listen first. And like I said, some of these guys have a hard time listening because they're not used to doing the things that they're being coached to do. And once they get over that hump and trust you, you know, that's when you got them.
With someone like Cam, you've probably seen that there was, you know, part of the show was about his conditions and medication he was taking to deal with that. That seemed to have a real impact on his concentration levels, especially in film room. It must be really frustrating when you know you have such a great talent on your hands and you have to go through the film with a guy that, it's not that he can't do it, but just seems so reluctant to do it and maybe holds other people up with what you're trying to do with the rest of them.
Oh, yeah, it's very frustrating, you know. But, you know, how you deal with that is, you know, you take playing time away and you don't let that guy be a distraction because, you know, I have 10 to 11 other guys in my room that I have to coach and get ready, you know. So if we have one or if I have one that, you know, wants to take that type of route and, you know, make it frustrating for everybody, I'm just going to relieve him from, you know, the playing field until he gets that point across. You know, I'm not going to reward guys for being for having bad attitudes. I'm not going to reward guys for, you know, not doing what they're supposed to do. I'm not going to reward guys for not caring. You know, and your reward is actually getting on their field on game day. And the only way you can get on their field on game day with me if through the week you take the right approach to the game and you prepare yourself, you know, to do your best for you and your teammates. And those are the guys that's going to go out there and give it the all, and those are the guys that's going to pretty much win for you.
Yeah. So when obviously with Cam, Bont, Tim, and Chauncey Rivers, they've all gone on, I think, they've gone to Florida Atlantic, Mississippi State, and is it Pittsburgh that Cam Carter's moved on to?
Yes.
Yeah. So
yes.
When those teams come knocking on your door and when they come calling, what is your role then at that point, and how often do they show up and check in during the season?
Well, you know, those coaches, if they really like one of our guys, you know, they'll call, you know, once every week or once every 2 weeks or so just to check in and see how things are going. And when they reach out to me about my guys in particular, you know, I'm honest. You know, because at the end of the day, you know, you want to make sure that, you know, the team that's calling about these kids, you straight up with them. You know what I mean? Because, you know, we need those college coaches to come in to recruit our kids to help us get more kids. So, you know, it looks good for us when we have guys like Chauncey and Cam and Tim Bonner and Ezekiel Rose, you know, those type of guys going to Division I programs. It looks good for us. So, you know, you want to have to be a relationship with college coaches too. You never want to tell them, you never want to lie or, you know, anything like that as far as the player. So you want to be honest as you can without hurting the football player, you know, but you still have to let those guys know what they have to look forward to.
Yeah.
In terms of the actual game, as Seahawk fans, we unfortunately get to see a lot of good defensive line play against us because our defensive line is notably not the best. When you're calling plays in an individual, you know, each play, are you telling each player what to do in each one, or do they have permission to sort of express themselves with a bull rush or a stunt, or, you know, or is that every single thing coming from you for each play?
Well, you know, throughout the course of the week, you know, we scout our opponents. You know, we learn, we watch the offensive line. We watch their strengths, we watch their weaknesses. And, you know, I'm pretty much teach them, you know, a couple of moves, and each one of them will figure out what move is best for that particular guy that they're getting lined up against. So that has more so to do with scouting, but we all, at every play of the game, every play that we call defensively, somebody's going to be accounted for something. You know, they're not going to be out there doing their own thing. Those guys who do are out there doing their own thing will eventually end up over on the bench with me.
So obviously during the show, a lot of the attention is focused on Buddy. What is he like to work with, and what is that relationship like from head coach to position coach for the Lions?
You know, for the most part, man, you know, he's a good coach to work for. You know, the things that you guys see on TV are kind of, you know, exaggerated a little bit. You know, he is who he is. He's a coach that wants to win. He's a coach that cares about this football team, and he's a coach that cares about our staff and players. You know, behind closed doors, you know, he's straight to the point. You know, and he also motivates us to do well as coaches, and you know, he motivates, you know, our players to do well. I mean, there's plenty of times that there have been conversations that I've been involved with him and players that has been totally opposite of what people think. And you know, every show needs a villain, and I hate that. You know, he was portrayed as a villain, but he's far from that. You know, no one wants to call any other football coach who you see on TV, you know, going at it with, you know, coaches and players on the sideline, you know, a villain. But I mean, it's football. You know, when you care about football, you know, there's a certain attitude and a demeanor that you got to have, and you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. So obviously on the defensive line at EMCC, you've had Jarran Reed, and this year you had DJ Jones, who've gone on and got drafted into the NFL. What benefits does that pay in recruiting, and obviously, and as having that on your CV for when you want to look to move on and get the head coaching job somewhere else for yourself?
Those things do go on the resume.
Yeah.
You know, but at the end of the day, you can put whatever you want to on your resume, as far as coaching wise. But they still want to know what type of person you are and how much ball you know, and can you recruit. You know, can you coach? Can you recruit? And, you know, and what type of personality and what type of person you are. I think those are the three biggest things that coaches look for, you know, versus just looking to me. But as far as recruiting, you know, majority of our recruiting is in-state.
Yeah.
And right now we have more defensive linemen in the NFL playing right now with Quentin Dowell and Jerry and D'Nico Archery and DJ Jones and Petway and Za'Darius Smith, who is actually my first cousin, plays with the Ravens.
Yeah.
You know, all those guys come right here out of East Mississippi. And no other junior college can say that right now in the country.
I read a book which followed Ed Orgeron around for a year, and it seemed like the recruiting could be a full-time job in itself, in addition to being a head coach. In terms of what you do, how much time, or what's the split of your time between recruiting and coaching? And, you know, from an hours a week perspective, how many are you working?
Well, you know, since our recruiting is only within the state of Mississippi, you know, it's not, you know, you are able to, you know, recruit every week in district. You know, they've changed our rules now to where we can only recruit the guys within our local area. So, you know, we can't have contact with any kids, you know, outside of our local area, outside of our district. So, you know, recruiting is kind of slowed down because this is a different league. You know, it's if I was Division One, I would tell you it's every day, because every day during the contact period, you're gonna have to make sure that you reaching out to kids and letting them know that you're interested in them and things of that nature. But here in the Mississippi JUCO League, it's a little different. You know, you can communicate with guys, but you know, it's only a handful of guys that's in your district. You know, a lot of kids in your district, but you know, as far as the ones that you actually want to recruit, it's probably a handful of guys. And you don't want to, you know, ruin a relationship by calling somebody every day. So you periodically, you know, reach out to them maybe once a week right now. And then once the state opens, you know, in November, then that's when there's going to be a mass exodus of just texts and phone calls and, you know, letters sent, things of that nature. That's just how the Mississippi rules is built right now.
Yeah, so obviously the show's moved on now, isn't it? It's gone to a different school. Is that right?
Yeah, I heard they're in Independence Community College. It's a community college up there in Kansas.
Yeah, is that a relief to you, or is it just a case of just get on with your job regardless kind of thing?
You know, like I said, man, you know, the cameras and being around, it wasn't a big issue to me. At the end of the day, I had to coach football.
Yeah.
And that's what I was going to do, you know. So it didn't matter to me, but I do hate that it left because I felt like it gave us an edge. And I enjoyed listening and hearing our story, watching our story, you know, because some of these stories that, you know, I didn't know about till the show actually came out, you know, because you don't know when they're here and when they're sitting down with these guys and, you know, where they're going and things of that nature. So it was entertaining for me, you know, but... you know, it is what it is, man. We got to make sure that we win some ball games. And when I'm upset, those cameras gone. Yeah. You know, I like them here. I enjoy them. But at the end of the day, you know, I get paid to coach these guys in my room and these players on this team. So, but if you ask me if that job is gone, then I'd be like, yeah, I'm sad that it's gone because I ain't making no money. I ain't coaching. Ask me about that. Yeah. But it was good, man, and I know they're going to do a great job. Greg and those guys, the producer of the show, they're going to do a good job no matter where they're at, man, and they did an amazing job with us.
Yeah. So when we posted on our Facebook page that we were having you on the podcast, a few guys sent a few questions. One of them was from Will Travers. He wants to know what the transition was like for you from going from the NFL as a player to coaching at JUCO and obviously Jacksonville State. Was coaching something you'd always seen yourself doing once your career was over, or was it a surprising step that you took?
Well, it was a step that, you know, I tried to go out into the real world and get a real job. sold insurance after I got done playing ball, just to try to figure out what I wanted to do. Yeah. And, you know, that 9-to-5 and working off commission, man, that was for the birds, you know. So I decided to get back to what I know best, and that was football. And it was an easy, smooth transition, you know, because I've been taught by a lot of great football coaches in this league and in the NFL and, in college for the teams that I played for. So I had a little bit of knowledge of the game, and it was a smooth and easy transition. I really enjoy doing what I do.
Yeah, also Evan Wilson sent in a question. Is college ball damaging to the academic side of it, with players just focused more on the money and going pro aspect of it? Is that something that's accurate or something that you haven't seen at EMCC?
No, I don't think. I mean, I don't think that, you know, football is damaging to academics. No. Not at all, because you do have guys that play football who are doggone scholars. I just seen, prime example, I just seen an article I think it was sometime this summer, about how, you know, the football player for the Ravens went from playing in the NFL to being a neurosurgeon. Like, people get real. Yeah. You know, education is going to be just as important as you make it. And we make education a priority here. And if your program doesn't make education a priority, then, yeah, football is going to be in the ruin of education. But as long as you have education a priority, no, it's up to the individual to take football seriously, because we can't make these young men sit down and write an essay and make an A. You know, we can't make these young men sit down and open a book. You know, education is going to be important to the individual, you know, and this is an organization. You know, here at East Mississippi and all the schools that I've been at, you know, we've always made education a priority.
Yeah. So obviously you play college ball at Troy, and you said earlier that when you're coaching players that you kind of wish that they had someone like you who could like keep them on the right path kind of thing. How has the college player changed from when you were at college on your journey, as it were?
You know that you know when I came up, you know no one dreamed of like going to the NFL. You know, going to the NFL was like, you know, a far-fetched deal. We just played the game because we love to go out there and run around and hit people.
Yeah.
You know, it gave us a reason to try to talk trash. We actually enjoyed the game. But, you know, nowadays you get people talking about, man, I just want to play ball, man. I love to play ball, man. But don't show it by their work ethic.
Yeah.
You know, and don't show it by, you know, the work ethic in the classroom. Because, you know, nowadays, if you don't have an education, if you don't have the high GPA or don't pass the ACT score, you won't play. But you love the game. So if you love the game, you need to do what it takes to get you to the point where you need to be. And I think that's the biggest difference between, you know, the players when I came up and the players now. You have to show your love for the sport on and off the field, because it goes hand in hand, you know.
Yeah, so at Troy, obviously, they've had O.C. Umanura, DeMarcus Ware. I think Cliff Averill from the Seahawks, he went to Troy, I believe, as well. So what sets them apart to go on and have the careers that they did from the players who perhaps slip through the cracks and end up in JUCO, like at the Lions? What sets them apart? Is it just... Is it just luck, or is there something ingrained in them that really pushes them forward?
Well, you know, there's an old saying in football. There's no difference from, say, for instance, a kid in JUCO versus a kid who's in NCAA college football. The only difference between those two people is from the neck up. You know, your mindset. Got guys here that have NFL bodies. We got guys here that have, you know, NFL speed, you know, but we don't, you know, but the difference is you got to have that mentality. You know, you got to have the heart and the will, the mindset to do those things. And, you know, knowing Ocean and knowing DeMarcus, two guys that I played with, you know, those guys had the mindset that they wanted to be, they did, and they understood what they had to do to be great at what they did. And therefore, they were great at what they did, you know. So, you know, and, you know, these days, man, you know, if you want something, it ain't going to come for free. You're going to have to work for it.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, it's just a mindset. You know, there's no difference between a guy here right now versus a guy at the University of Alabama, but from the neck up, you know, your mindset, how you thinking, you know, where's your head at, what you want to do, how bad you want it. You know, figuring out the way to get what you want done.
Yeah, I mean yourself, Umanura and DeMarcus Ware. That is quite an imposing defensive line, just by name alone, isn't it? So, Adam, any questions?
So we are obviously a Seahawk-based podcast. Do you get to watch any NFL football anymore, or do you stick to the college stuff?
Well, you know, normally on Sundays, you know, Sunday is a big preparation day to get ready for the next game of the week. So while NFL is on, I'm sitting here breaking down the next week's opponent. But if it's a good matchup, if it's a good game, you know, I'll try to tune in. But I keep up with it. You know, I'm not familiar with who are the, you know, up and coming players in the NFL. But, you know, I do watch the draft, and I do, check in every now and then. You know, I think this year I'm actually going to play a little fantasy football just to get back into it. So
the Seahawks have got a pretty decent defensive line with Bennett, Cliff Averill, and Frank Clark. And Frank Clark was the guy that Tim Bonner reminded me of quite a lot when I was watching him play on the show and when he was really flashing. Who are your favorite D linemen to watch in college or at the NFL when you do get a chance to do some scouting outside of your normal tape?
Well, you know, I just like defensive line, period. My favorite guys to watch in college football, defensive line-wise, are the guys that I coach. And I know that may sound cliche, But I'm telling you, I don't have time to focus on anybody or any other team outside of my own. those are the guys that I like to watch because I like to, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you opening up a box and what's inside that box, you develop into, you know, this big and better and faster and leaner defensive lineman, and he can go out there and just, you know, ball. You know, I just like to see the development of my own kids and my own guys. So, DJ Jones, you know, the guys that I've coached, you know, I like to watch them. Zadarius, those guys that I mentioned, that I played with and I know I cheer for. You know, once Ocean DeMarcus stopped playing, I guess he's gone to DJ Jones and Jaren Reed and Zadarius Smith, because those are the guys that, you know, I have a connection with. Not necessarily a personal connection with Jaren, because he was here the year before I got here, but with Zadarius, definitely, and DJ Jones, definitely, because I coach DJ here. So those are going to be the guys that I look out for this upcoming season.
Yeah. So who is the next DJ Jones and Jaren Reed from the 2017 squad that we should keep an eye on for a couple of years?
Oh man. I mean, you know, right now, their talent has not yet to be seen. But you know, just like I tell them, you know, we don't play tomorrow. So we got time to get better. And over the next couple of weeks throughout the season, hopefully, you know, I can tell you then. But right now, we're just working and grinding, trying to get better. We got some really good guys here, really good football players here up front. But, you know, I'm also a coach that don't like to jinx anything. So I ain't finna give you a name and that player don't come out to play the best. But you guys just have to tune in, man. All our games are broadcasted on our website every Thursday night, so you guys just have to tune in and watch us.
Cool. How are we going to get Ronald Ollie in the NFL? That's who I want to see in the NFL.
I think Ollie right now is playing for some arena team. I don't know which one, but, you know, he's living out his dream of playing ball, you know, so, you know, we'll see how he ends up.
Yeah, so one more question from Chris Bolden. He sent in on our Twitter. Just quickly, he wants to know the different techniques on the line. Obviously, we hear a lot of one tech, three tech. What is the differences and how do they differ in roles across the line from one to three to?
Well, you know, those different techniques are based upon where you line up on the offensive alignment. Offensive alignment in front of you. You know, you have a center, two guards, and two tackles. They make up the offensive line. Well, if you're shading on the outside of each tackle, that's a five technique. If you're shading on the outside of each guard on both sides, that's a three technique. When you're shading on either side of the center, you know, that's either a one technique or a shade, what people call it. So it's just those techniques. So, you know, the alignments for defense alignment across the front, you know, on offense alignment. And those players have to be different sizes and shapes. And the five techniques, which with Bennett plays for the Seahawks, you know, you have to be a speedy rusher. You know, for a three technique, like a guy like Jaren Reed, he can play a three or a shade or a one technique. You know, you want those to be a bigger, wider, stronger. And if they're athletic, you know, they're going to be making a lot of money. You know, those are the different type of body styles, you know, as far as those techniques concerned and where they lined up across the front with offensive linemen.
Yeah. So what in your coaching career, what is the next step for you? Do you think, is it moving on to be the top guy somewhere, or is it just to keep learning at the Lions and just take whatever comes?
You know, wherever God takes me, man, that's where I'm going to go. If God wants me here for another year, that's where I'm going to be. But if I had anything to do with it, you know, my next step is to be a Division I football coach, at that level, because I've never been one. I've worked at FCS, but I've never been an actual Division I football coach. And I want to be a Division I football coach and then become a coordinator and be a head coach, you know. But if head coach comes before coordinator, I take it.
Yeah, but a massive thanks to you for coming on and talking to us. I appreciate it. Obviously it's early in the morning at the start of the day for you. We really do appreciate you taking the time and chatting with us on the podcast. Is there anywhere that people can get in touch if they want to keep track of the Lions and you in particular on social media?
Well, at DavLW on Twitter. You know, you guys can hit me up there and reach me there. And, you know, that's my football page and recruiting page for school. So just hit me up at DavLW, DAVLW, at Twitter.
Cool. I think I'll speak to Adam. Best of luck for the season ahead. And we will definitely be keeping track of the Lions and your career for sure. Massive, massive thanks, Coach.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate you guys having me. Make sure y'all send me a copy of this interview so I can show it to my mom.
We will.
If God ever brings us to the UK, we'd love to have a beer with you, and we can show you how big a fan base you've got over here as well.
Okay, just one?
Well, no. We'll start with one.
All right, guys, man. I appreciate that. Yeah, well, I appreciate that, man. Thank you, guys.
2:19 to go, all three timeouts left in the half for the Hawks. Wilson out throwing to Jimmy Graham. Up and over for a first down and more.
How healthy is Jimmy Graham? That's impossible. Seahawks could have an NBA team with George Fant and Jimmy Graham. It's a bootleg. He's going to catch his ball in the flat and jump right over Stephon Gilmore. Unbelievable. He made a one-handed touchdown catch. And he looks like he's...
Clock running. Plenty of time left for Seattle in the half with three timeouts. To the end zone, Graham tries for another one-handed catch and makes it. Touchdown, Seahawks.
This is a circus show. Right, so that was fun, wasn't it, Adam?
Yeah, very interesting. It's always great to have guests from the other side of the pond who actually know what they're talking about on as opposed to us. It is amazing, as I said to you, how just all consumed they are by the game, that, you know, having a life outside of it must be really difficult. But he'll be certainly one person that I miss on my screen next year, because he was great, really enjoyable to watch. I'm really pleased we've got the chance to speak to him.
Yeah, same. I was quite happy and quite pleased when I got the email through saying we could arrange it. And the tech and the time zone didn't waylay anything either. But moving on, the Seahawks move on to the third preseason game. It's the one where we're going to see the starters probably for the longest period in this preseason. It's this Friday night, Saturday morning. It's at Century Link Field. It's against the Kansas City Chiefs. This game will also be the debut in the commentary booth of Tony Romo, which at least doesn't mean Phil Simms isn't there. Patrick Mahomes on their side has stirred a small, if probably insignificant, quarterback controversy with just how allergic he is to the checkdown. But on the Seahawks side, what are you looking for from the offense this week, Adam? Is it just a finding that left tackle 2 weeks away from the start of the season?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good a test as any you could possibly have for who you're looking for on the offensive line, because the Chiefs are known for strong defensive play, and it's not going to be easy. I mean, it's probably with losing Fan and not wanting any more injuries, it's probably not the ideal. Well, it is and isn't the ideal third preseason game, which is obviously typically the one where the starters play the most. So let's just get everyone healthy, and if we can see the zip around the ball on both sides, then I'll be very happy again.
Yeah, is it the same on the defensive side as well? Then just look to get through it and just show the players who have showed out to continue to show out and give the team decisions to make when the roster comes in about 10 days' time. Is that?
Yeah, and we've got a lot of wide receivers to deal with this year that are not going to be easy, and so how we deal with someone like Tyreek Hill will be good to watch. Sherman's never typically loved playing against a player like that, and T.Y. Hilton is nigh this year, so it'll be interesting to see how he deals with the threat like that.
Yeah, but as I said, this week's game is on CBS. It is prime time, so it will be a yet again, as last week's was, because it was the only game on Friday night. It's a national stage for some of these players, so the ones that show out are going to make it really difficult for the team to keep hold of and sneak onto the practice squad in a couple of weeks. Any other NFL news or players catch your attention in week 2, Adam?
Well, there's been the debate about the Odell Beckham hit by the Browns, which I thought was cheap. If not, it wasn't disgusting. It wasn't, you know, season-long banning thing, but it's Greg Williams. But that, I guess that's the problem with the preseason, where you've got these kids that are trying to make a name for themselves, and they have to hit Odell Beckham. The guy may have slipped into it to give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, but it didn't look very pretty to me, and you don't like to see that. I mean, especially as we'd like to go and see him play in October.
Yeah, there is that. There's that selfish part of it. But it is at the stage of the season, it is a bit cheap. And then to find out that it's Greg Williams was the most unsurprising thing of that whole thing. It sounds like he's obviously clearly going to be out for the rest of the preseason. His week one status seems in a bit of a cloud.
But I mean, why you'd ever play him in the preseason, you have to question, because what are you going to learn from it?
And I think I think Brandon Marshall got injured against the Browns. I think he bruised his shoulder, so it wasn't the best trip to Ohio for the Giants. But for me, obviously, talking of that game as well, was the 12 Browns players kneeling in prayer, apparently, during the national anthem. Obviously, Michael Bennett said last week that he hoped that it would create conversation, it would provide a spark to the debate and to the issue that he was trying to highlight. And it's most definitely doing that, isn't it?
100%. And Seth DeValve, the Cleveland tight end, I believe is the first white player to sit or kneel in protest of the anthem. Obviously, you've had Chris Long and Justin Britt show support for some of the black players who have been doing stuff. But Seth DeValve was the first one to actively involve himself in a protest, yeah, or whatever you want to call it. So that's interesting. He had a really good interview on it that is worth digging up on YouTube if anyone wants to hear his explanation for it.
Yeah, as you say, it's another example of a player concisely and coming across really, really well in how he explaining his reasons and the reasons for supporting his teammates. Obviously, at the same time, the 12 players were praying. Colquitt, the punter, and another white Browns player had the Chris Long, Justin Britt stance with a hand on the shoulder as well. Elsewhere in the NFL, the NFL and NFLPA are already at loggerheads. Obviously, Ezekiel Elliott. Issue and all the stuff coming from that really appears to have soured that relationship that bit more. I think it's time to get yourself prepared and braced for another holdout, isn't it, in a few years when the CBA is up for negotiation again, Adam?
Oh, 100%, especially if these players aren't going to settle for the salary cap anything like what it is currently. And you can sort of see why. I mean, you've got basketball players and baseball players earning astronomical amounts of money, and whilst they do play more, the risk on their bodies and their long-term future is generally negligible. So you do have to question how sustainable this is, given the amount of money that is in the game, why the players aren't seeing a bit more of the cheese.
Yeah, I think when it comes out, I think yesterday, that every time as commissioner, that Roger Goodell has earned 200 odd million or something absolutely scandalous and ridiculous and astronomical. It does not play well into on the negotiating table in a few years. So obviously week three is just around the corner in a few days time. This is the league wide time where it's the truest sign of what the team's going to look like in the season, isn't it? Obviously, Seahawks, apart from the Seahawks, we've already covered on, but for people like the rookies of Deshaun Watson, Deshaun Kizer, just seem kind of being held back almost by their teams by just outperforming the guys they're backing up. But this is their last chance to really stake a claim. It's also a time 5 years ago where Russell Wilson did win out and beat Matt Flynn. So is that something that you might expect to see from the rookies we touched on last week?
Yeah, you'd hope so. I mean, the thing about rookie quarterbacks is that they will always be overvalued by the supporters of a bad team. So if Tom Savage has a lousy first half in the Texans' first game of the season, you can bet your life that the Texan fans will be screaming for Deshaun Watson. And it's not something that's alien to Bill O'Brien, who benched Brian Hoyer within a half, I think, of the first game for Ryan Mallett a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
so, you know, you never know. As indicative as the preseason is, For rookie quarterbacks to not be named as the starter often can just be more of a ceremonial thing than anything else. I mean, I don't expect Patrick Mahomes to start, but I think for the other rookie quarterbacks, Trubisky, Watson, and Kizer, I think they might be in there sooner than later.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, I made it fully well known that I Patrick Mahomes was my favourite quarterback of the lot. He was so much fun at Texas Tech. Some of his POC scores there are just ridiculous. So I'm quite looking forward to seeing how he does against, obviously it'll be the backups by then, but how he does against the Seahawks. Defence. Obviously next week we'll be back with a pod to talk over whatever comes from the Chiefs game, look ahead to the Raiders game, and see maybe a Marshawn Lynch running into a Seahawk defensive player. That could be something to watch next week. Also, next week we are going to try and get a couple of familiar guests back on, and we also will be doing at some point an NFC West roundtable with a fan from the 49ers, the Rams, and the Cardinals. If you want some competitive action, competitive ball, FCS action kicks up back up this week. BYU, the standout team who are back playing the Division 1 games, the big games, the Bama against Florida State is just 9 or 10 days away next Saturday. And obviously UW Adam return against Rutgers with Jake, Vita and Azeem, the trifecta to watch, isn't it?
Cannot wait. I'm getting overly excited that it could be our year. although despite the looming horrors of USC to come, hopefully in the championship game. But yeah, let's see. It beckons to be a very exciting season at Montlake.
Yeah. So if for those people who are listening who haven't watched college football before, it's usually on BT Sport. I think the BYU game is somewhere on BT Sport this weekend. If not, game day is next week. Obviously, against the Bama, Florida State game is just going to be the most ridiculous opening week game because the Florida State really do look set to return to the college football playoffs. But until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks!
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks, Super Bowl 48 champions.